Hi, this is spoken word artist Tribal Rain.
And this is Max Parthas, host of New Abolitionist Radio, modern day slavery abolitionists. And you are listening to 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio.
Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. It's Monday morning. My name is Jamie. Today, host Teresa Wilkie talks with attorney and author Dee Wampler about his new book, The Gun Law Handbook. They will focus in on gun laws in Missouri and how to conduct yourself in interactions with police. Stay tuned for our calendar of events in the middle of the broadcast and the 420 drug war news at the end of the broadcast. Coming up is Teresa Wilkie and her guest, Dee Wampler.
Good morning. Welcome to Jaws of Justice Radio. My name is Teresa Wilkie, and this morning we're lucky to have an interview with Dee Wampler, a criminal justice attorney from Springfield, Missouri, who has written a book called The Gun Law Handbook. Good morning, Dee. Are you there?
Good morning, and thank you. It's nice to join the listeners to Community Radio KKFI.
Yes.
I'm in Springfield, Missouri.
Yes, thank you so much. I have read your book, and when did you write this book?
This book was written last year. It's entitled The Gun Law Handbook, and I knew that the Missouri law would be changing January the 1st of 2018. And I thought it would be a good idea to write this pamphlet. It's a softback book consisting of 200 pages. And people need to know what the law is. They might be unfortunately charged with violating the law. Ignorance of the law is no excuse. That's not a defense. And so everybody in a democratic free society needs to know what the law is so that they can obey it. And that's the reason I wrote this book. I've written several other books in years past. I've been practicing law 53 years. I used to be prosecuting attorney in Greene County here in Springfield.
Oh, that's interesting. Sure.
I've written a book, the Criminal Law Handbook, which came out in the 70s and 80s and early 90s. And then another book was Defending Yourself Against Cops in Missouri and Other Strange Places. And that book now basically, unfortunately, is out of print. But I will be writing a new book probably in 2019. That book is going to be entitled Show Me Your Hands. And so I'm just a lawyer that likes to write books and advise people on what the law is, and that's my story.
You're doing a tremendous service when you do this. As you said, ignorance of the law is no defense to violation of the law, and we owe it to ourselves to be aware of the law so that I believe people are compliant or law compliant, and so you're doing a great service, Dee. Thank you so much. Okay, now I'm going to run through your book largely in the order it's written, and you start by your chapter says what you can and cannot do and references the Second Amendment of our Constitution, which guarantees the right to keep and bear arms. Then it goes to use of force in defense of persons, and then use of physical force in defense of premises. So the Second Amendment of the United States has been upheld, and people have the right to bear arms in the United States, correct?
Yes, that's pretty well decided. There are still a few people that want to contest it, but it's been decided by various Supreme Court decisions that you have the right to own and possess weapons with a few limits and restrictions in America. It is more complicated because we have federal law, and then we also have all of the states that have the right to enact their own legislation. So it gets a little confusing when you go from state to state. You have the right to own and possess a weapon. That's pretty well been decided by the U.S. Supreme Court in two cases. One was U.S. versus Heller. One was U.S. versus McDonald. those U.S. Supreme Court cases were 10 years ago, and a person has the right to own and possess a loaded weapon in their own home.
So Heller was in the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., and McDonald in Chicago. People have the right to carry guns, and they have the right to use physical force to defend their persons and their premises. So then, seems to me a more recent change is possession of concealable weapons. Am I wrong? Is this a recent advent to gun possession?
No, you're correct. It's important for people to know that you can't take a life and you can't use deadly force, whether you're in your home or outside your home, or we have a stand your ground law now. The stand your ground law says, quote, wherever you have the right to be, end of quote. You have the right of self-defense, and if you're in reasonable fear for your own safety and someone else started an argument or is threatening you with physical force and violence or your family, you do have the right to meet that force, and that includes deadly force if it's reasonable under the circumstances. Now, you do not have the right to take a life or use deadly force in defense of property, okay? So you can't take a life if somebody's stealing your car. You can't shoot and kill them, but if a child is in the car, your child is, and they're stealing the car, well, you may have the right to do so. But yes, getting back to your specific question, back when I was prosecuting attorney and as a defense lawyer over the last 53 years, I've defended a lot of people for CCW, carrying a concealed weapon. And if that weapon was not discernible to ordinary observation, it was a felony. Now, that's pretty well out now. We are a constitutional carry state. If you are 18 or over, you don't have to get a permit anymore, and you can carry a concealed weapon. You can pretty well carry a loaded weapon tied on a string around your neck and walk around Kansas City, unless Kansas City has an ordinance against it.
Right, there are a few restrictions on that.
Against weapons, possibly Kansas City, St. Louis, and I think Branson.
Right. Thank you, Dee. There are a few restrictions.
You can pretty much carry a weapon anywhere you want, and you can actually display it. We have a statute that allows you to temporarily display or make known the fact, as long as you're not in a rude or threatening manner, the fact that you are packing heat.
There are a few restrictions on the rights of citizens to carry concealed weapons, and one of those is a conviction, a felony conviction. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely. I think everybody's got to get it straight in their mind. If you are a convicted felon, you may not own or possess a weapon, period. Now, in the rural areas, everybody says, well, I've got to have a weapon. I live out in the country. We have varmints out here. It takes a long time for the law to get here if we have to call 911, and we need a weapon for self-protection. If you're a convicted felon, the answer is no. You cannot have or own or possess a weapon if you are a convicted felon. I mean, that's the way it is. Now, we have a new expungement law, and I'll mention it, that starting January 1st of 2018, if you're a convicted felon and you've survived your probation successfully and waited 7 years, you can get many felonies expunged off your record. If it's a misdemeanor, 3 years after you're off probation. But there are many felonies now, the majority of them you can get expunged. And once you get those erased off your record, then you can own or possess a weapon.
Then there are age requirements.
Talking about it, there are about 17 different areas in Missouri that you can specifically not carry a weapon. So whether you're a convicted felon or not, and whether you've got a concealed carry permit or not, you can still get a permit that's still available for you, but there are places where you cannot ever carry a weapon.
I want to touch on that later. I want to hit on the restrictions on gun ownership. ages, a certain age is a requirement. Is that 18?
Yes, it is.
They're really, you can't be a felon. You have to be 18, and otherwise you go to a gun shop, apply for a permit. These things are issued, and then you are free to carry your gun. Now, there is a reasonable man standard under the law, and the reasonable man standard is used in judging the legality of a person's conduct in court. So juries will decide whether a person acted in an appropriate way. And when you say, when you talk about stand your ground, can you explain what is the difference between killing someone and just wounding them under the stand your ground law?
Well, stand your ground just simply, that came from the Trayvon Martin case in Sanford, Florida, about 4 years ago, where a man named Zimmerman got into an argument with Trayvon Martin, and they were walking along the street and an altercation occurred. The same thing could happen and has happened many times in Missouri. It also happens in road rage cases and so forth. Is that if you have the legal right to be somewhere and you are threatened with physical force or harm, you can repel that harm and meet it. And you're right. It's the reasonable man standard. The term reasonable just keeps appearing and reappearing in our law everywhere. And what is or is not reasonable is it's a crapshoot. Okay, it depends on what a jury says in any given factual situation. That's why it's very important for people to know what the law is and not go off unprepared, no pun intended, to go off half-cocked. You've got to know what the law is and act in a reasonable manner. And
that's a pretty good...
if you act in an unreasonable manner, as that term might be found by the jury, not only can you be prosecuted criminally, but you can also be sued civilly. And that's what a lot of people don't realize, is we have two courts, criminal and civil. So either way, you may have to get a lawyer and spend a lot of money and defend yourself. So in the stand your ground situation, it's just meeting force with force. If you're not the aggressor and you didn't cause the violence that you see, and you're threatened or your family is threatened, well, you have the right of self-defense.
The point of the reasonable person standard is we owe it to ourselves, number one, as we've hit upon, to know the law, and number two, to act in a reasonable fashion or a logical fashion, to have some sort of reason for, defensible reason, legal reason for our behavior. So do you want to speak with me about the Castle Doctrine? Is that peculiar to Missouri?
No, absolutely not. Under case law many years ago, we've already had case law that permitted self-defense in your own home. I think this goes back 250 or 300 years ago at least, where a English judge back in the common law day said a man's home is his castle, and you own it all the way to the center of the earth and all the way to the up to the atmosphere, and not even the king himself can cross the threshold of your home unless, as we now know it under the Fourth Amendment, there is reasonable or probable cause to believe that a crime has been or is being committed, and there's a search warrant, or unless you consent to let the police in your home. But your home is your castle, and you don't have to let anybody in your home, like law enforcement, unless they have a search warrant. And certainly if someone comes into your home and threatens you or your family, you can fire away if you are if you're in fear. And I love cases like that when clients come into my office and they're charged with a crime. My first question is, where did this occur? If it occurred in your home, I probably got a really good defense. In fact, there's a statute on it that provides that it's a good defense. But if it occurred in the other man's home, then we've got a problem. And if it occurred out in the street somewhere, well, then we're back to the jury. The jury's got to decide the question. And most jury verdicts are compromises. So you got to convince a jury, the prosecutor does, beyond a reasonable doubt, they have to convict all convince all 12 people of your guilt. And that's a matter that it's fact-specific, so it depends on each case.
That's in the circumstance of a criminal justice opinion. Civil justice is not quite the strong evidentiary standard. So
that's right. In
defending
law,
your home,
beyond a reasonable doubt, and in civil law, it's by preponderance of the evidence.
Defending your home is certainly a person's right. However, defending your home when you're not there, like with a trick gun on the door or some sort of deadly force that is invocable in your absence, that would be questionable, correct?
That's not a good idea. That's not a lot. Again, you might be taking deadly force in defense of property. That's not a good idea. And, you know, it could be a postman that knocks on the door or a meter reader or some relative that comes into your house unexpectedly. And so I don't think trip guns are a good idea. I want to make sure that the listeners know that there are a number of places that even if you had a permit, and even if you have the right to conceal carry, there are places you can't go, like the airports, the schools, courthouses, within 25 feet of a polling place, amusement parks, riverboat gambling, casinos, hospitals, sports arenas, child care facilities, amusement parks, and churches. There are a lot of places where you got to look out that you cannot take a gun. And, of course, we have gun-free zones now. A business or a church can put a sign up, I think it's 11 by 14 with 1 or 2 inch lettering that says no guns allowed or guns prohibited. Those are called what we call gun-free zones. So if you try to go into a business that does not permit guns, they'll ask you to leave, and if you won't leave, they can charge you with an infraction. And so there are places you cannot carry guns. There are two places where you can never, ever, ever carry a gun or a bullet. I bet you don't know what those are. Number one is a post office or a post office parking lot. No guns, not even an unloaded one in your trunk. Never, ever on a post office property. And number two, on an Indian gambling casino. No guns ever or bullets are ever allowed on any property like that.
Now, do places like that have to survey people? Certainly my post office does not make me walk through a metal detector.
Well, yeah, that's a real good question. If a business puts up a sign that says it's a gun-free zone, they're inviting you to come in, and they're saying, we're safe here. You're safe here. You don't need a gun here. Well, what is that property owner doing to ensure your safety in there? Are they going to wand you when you go in or walk you through a metal detector or frisk you or pat you down? If they don't, they're simply inviting what we call an active shooter. An active shooter is basically a coward who wants publicity, he's got a cause, or he's some kind of mentally defective individual, and he's going to look for the safest place to go to kill people. He's going to look for a gun-free zone. So this holds the property owner out to a civil lawsuit. That's why, you know, gun-free zones probably are not a good idea unless, as a business owner, you are definitely taking steps to protect your customers that come in.
Yes, I remember the terrible murder of unarmed citizens at a Batman movie, and there is reason to believe this offender is currently awaiting trial, and he deliberately sought a movie theater because he knew it was a drug-free zone, and that's a great tragedy.
Yeah, well, we've got what do we have now, like 300 million people in the United States, and we've got probably 120 million guns at least. I think the polls show around 40-45% of all people in the United States either have a gun or have the right to possession of a gun in their home. And it's crazy. In the earlier days, men and women and parents, when the families were a little bit closer than they are now, would take their children out. They'd take them hunting, or they would show them a weapon and teach them how dangerous a weapon is. Many of us, myself included, have been in the military. And so we understand the deadly nature and seriousness of a gun. Never point a loaded weapon at anybody, and always know what is downrange, what you're pointing a weapon at. But many of the young people today, they have no training, no education along this line, and they've watched these crazy video games where they're shooting and killing people in video games, and they can't get over the transition that it goes to real life, that when you have a real gun and you shoot somebody on the street, you know, you're gonna kill somebody. And so, unfortunately, young people today just do not have the training and education that many of us older senior citizens had the benefit of.
Well, let's say that again loud and clear without referencing the age of people, but if you have a gun and you have a right to have a gun in the United States, it's very, very important to be aware of gun safety, to know how to use the gun, to know how to aim a gun, and how to keep it as safe as humanly possible. That's a great thing to say, Dee. Thank you for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And people have to know there are many places. It's basically a D felony, carries up to 7 now. There's also a lot of crimes that are E felonies that carry up to 4. You have to be careful about shooting a weapon. If you shoot along a road or across a roadway, or if you shoot from a motor vehicle, or worse yet, into a motor vehicle, or if you exhibit a weapon in a rude or threatening or angry manner, there are a lot of situations where you can be charged with a crime, just carelessness. Sometimes, you know, if there's a stray varmint out in the yard, or you're wanting to go out and fire a weapon in order to scare a dog off or something, I mean, you have to be very careful, because you may be violating the municipal ordinance, you may be violating the state law. So there's nothing like education in a democratic society to know what you can and cannot do. And as we said at the top of the program, ignorance of the law is definitely no excuse in our state or Kansas or any other state.
Dee, our interview is going very well. We're going to take a break. This is Teresa Wilkie, and I'm speaking with Dee Wampler, a criminal justice attorney from Springfield, Missouri, who's written a book called The Gun Law Handbook. We're going to break now for our calendar of events, and I will return with Dee shortly. Thank you.
Now the calendar for the week of August 13th. The KC Chapter of Mothers in Charge Healing Support Group will be meeting Thursday, August 13th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Robert J. Mohart Multipurpose Center, Suite 124, 3200 Wayne Avenue, KCMO. This group is for people who have lost loved ones to murder and violence. The first hour will be sharing of experiences, and in the second hour, therapists and others who can help navigate the emotional and legal terrain will be available. For more information, you can find them on the web at www.kcmothersincharge.org or call them at 816-912-2601. You are invited to join the Kansas City chapter of NORML, the National Organization to Reform Marijuana Laws, to celebrate their third anniversary on Saturday, August 18th, starting at 6:30 p.m. at Californos, 4124 Pennsylvania Avenue, KCMO. They will have information available about New Approach Missouri's medical marijuana ballot measure that was recently certified for the November election. Camp Choice is partnering with Wildwood Outdoor Education Center to provide 8th to 12th graders an unforgettable experience connecting with nature and learning life-saving tips to prepare for and survive emergency situations. This is new for Camp Choice, welcoming parents of campers to join us for the weekend to help develop a household emergency preparedness plan. Space is limited. If you want to volunteer, you will have to pass a background check and attend a training session on either September 1st or September 15th. If your family wishes to attend or you want to volunteer, email campchoiceworldwide@yahoo.com or check their website at campchoicekc.com for details. My name is Jamie, reminding you that these events and more can be found on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page, as well as the Jaws of Justice Radio page on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. We want to thank our engineer today, Keith Washburn. Next, we will return to Teresa Wilkie and her guest, Dee Wampler.
This is Teresa Wilkie, and I'm having an interview with Dee Wampler. Dee is a criminal justice attorney from Springfield, Missouri, who has written a book called The Gun Law Handbook. And today we're discussing the dense content of this book. Dee, it's a fabulous book. There's a lot of good, useful information. Where we left off was talking about rules of gun safety, and you make the point to treat all guns as if they're loaded. Never let the muzzle cover anything you're not willing to destroy. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on the target. Be sure of your target. Always keep a gun pointed in a safe direction. Always keep the gun unloaded until ready to use. And then I'm going to add another one to that. Don't go brandishing a gun if you are in a personally impaired condition. That's an accident waiting to happen. Now, I want to go to the chapters on tricks police play. If a person is involved with the police and there's guns involved, you make the point, I love this chapter heading, Missouri is the show me state. In our state, police say, show me what's in your car, show me what's in your house. That's a fabulous chapter heading. Do you want to talk about searches of cars and homes?
Sure. Anytime you're pulled over for a routine traffic thing, not signaling a lane change or speeding or not having a light over your license plate or some insignificant thing, you're not under arrest at that point. You're temporarily detained unless the officer has probable cause to detain you a little bit longer than a routine traffic stop. And if you're asked to get out of the car, come back to the patrol car, at some point in time, it's converted into a formal arrest. The officer doesn't have to say you're under arrest. An officer may say, stand still, sit there, be quiet, don't move, things of that sort, and probably you're under arrest, technically under the law at that point. We use the, quote, free to leave test, end of quote. If you feel like you're free to leave, then you're not under arrest. But if you feel confined that you're not free to leave, you're under arrest. And anything you say will not be used against you unless you're advised of your Miranda warning rights. So those four Miranda warning rights from Miranda versus Arizona in 1966 are very important. Once you're advised of your Miranda warning rights, you're probably in trouble. You're probably looking at going into the local calaboose, and you may be a resident of the hotel there for a period of time until you get a bondsman. But you really don't have much in the way of constitutional rights in your car as compared to your residence. A car can be driven out quickly and removed from the scene, and the officer has to make a quick decision. Does he smell the sweet smell of marijuana and cannabis emanating from the interior of the car? And if he does, probably going to ask you to step out, come back to the patrol car. He's going to ask you for consent to search your car. And he probably has the right to make a quick search of your motor vehicle He may not have the right to open any sealed boxes or packages in the trunk, but he can make a very quick check of your car to look for any stolen property or drugs or illegal guns or evidence of another crime. Now, they don't have that same right in your house, as I've mentioned. You have to have a search warrant to do that unless you consent. Generally, as a criminal defense lawyer, I tell people don't consent to anything. You don't have to consent to let them come in your house. You don't have to let them consent to search your vehicle. They're probably going to do it anyway. And if you want to challenge it in court, you can challenge it later. But suffice to say, you don't have much in the way of the rights to object in your motor vehicle. So, and the best thing for our listeners to do is be polite to the law enforcement officer. You're going to get a lot more flies with honey and being nice than with a fly swatter. So be polite to the officer. He's just doing his job. And be respectful, and for God's sakes, if the officer says, show me your hands, show him your hands. Don't start fiddling around with a flashlight or a cell phone or something in your pocket, because you can get shot. There are too many law enforcement officers that are getting assassinated at point-blank range by crazy drivers that are fiddling around in their belt area or their pocket or in the console of the vehicle. So if the officer says, show me your hands, the best thing if you're pulled over is get your license out, put it in your hands, and put your hands on the wheel, okay? And be polite and answer the officer's questions.
So the worst thing you could do would be when you see those flashing red lights to start speeding away. Don't you agree with that? We have a lot of that in the Kansas City area.
Yeah, there's a comedian, Chris Rock. If you'll go to Chris Rock Crime on YouTube, he's a comedian, and he talks about five ways to not get the heck beat out of you by cops. And it's kind of funny the way he gives the scenario, but one of them is pull over. For Pete's sake, pull over. Number two, turn the rap music off. Number three, be polite. And be respectful, and it's no place to challenge a law enforcement officer's authority out on the shoulder of a highway. Best thing for you to do in that situation is shut up. If you're going to be mean or rude or disrespectful, just don't, because you're probably just going to invite the officer. He's only human. He's probably going to write you a ticket that maybe otherwise he's just going to give you a warning.
So they have to have a search warrant to search your house, but they don't need a search warrant to search your car. That's the general way the law has come to be defined. And when a police officer stops your car, stop your car, take out your driver's license, put your hands on the steering wheel, and be polite. So now then, let's talk about circumstance where you are taken to the police station and interrogated. What is there to know about police interrogations?
Well, you can be held for 24 hours in the state of Missouri with no charges being filed. If you're under arrest for a felony, that's mainly what we're concerned with, within 24 hours, they have to take you before a judge and file criminal charges on you or let you go. Otherwise, that's false imprisonment. They can be sued. So they can hold you during that time. And in some counties, they let you make an appearance bond. They let you call a bondsman, and you can bond to get out. Unless, of course, it's a major felony, or unless, of course, it's a DWI, they can hold you for a certain length of time until you sober up. Chances are, if you're taken in to headquarters, I would say 95% chance you're going to be audio and videotaped. So smile, you're on candid camera, and they'll take you into an interview room and advise you of your Miranda warning rights, and you're being videoed. So whether you know that you are or not, it's pretty well incumbent, I think, and good advice to tell you to, at this point, shut up. Under the Sixth Amendment, you have the right to what we call effective assistance of counsel, end of quote. And once you're under arrest or at the headquarters, it's a legal matter, and you need a lawyer to help you with a legal matter, just like you need a doctor to help you with a physical problem, medical problem that you have. So you ask for a lawyer, and that cannot be used against you later. Your silence cannot be used if you ask for a lawyer. So they're advising you of your right to a lawyer. And you can say, yes, thank you very much. I'm going to take that advice. I do want a lawyer. And if you'll mention lawyer, attorney, or Fifth Amendment, or any words to that effect, all questioning must cease. They can't question you any further. And that's probably pretty good advice. And then if a lawyer later tells you to go ahead and talk and make a statement, you're free to do so.
So I want to talk about criminal defense. And when you're being held at the police station and you feel that you're being held inappropriately, there's nothing wrong with stating your general denial. And to say it again and again, say it every time you're asked, and try to keep your statement consistent. Don't give them extra facts, because that's one of the tricks police play. Isn't that correct, Dee, where they try to get you to give different versions of the story?
Well, the law enforcement officers are trained interrogators. You're not, and I'm not. But law enforcement officers go to school, and they get 600-plus hours of training. And a lot of it is how to talk to people. You'll feel a lot better if you tell me. God will like you better. Your parents and family are going to be proud of you if you tell the truth. It's going to go easier on you in court. If you'll make a statement now, I'll let you go now. And I won't put your name in the newspaper or anything. So there are lots of different ways they can come at you to get you to talk. And the problem is you want to talk to the law enforcement officer. You like him. You want him to like you. You want a friend. And you think, well, he's a nice guy. I'm going to talk to him. The problem is he's going to turn that over to the prosecuting attorney, and they're going to file charges on you. And you may go to prison, or you may be on a sex registration list for the rest of your life, or you'll be mugshotted and fingerprinted. And you're going to lose your job, and it's going to be embarrassing. And you've got to think, although your parents always told you the police officer is your friend, always cooperate, as a criminal defense lawyer, I have to say, not so fast. Maybe you don't want to cooperate. 95% of the people in the Missouri Department of Corrections today talk, okay? They opened their mouth and tried to talk their way out of it, and it didn't work. So best thing for you to do is shut up.
And then
claim your constitutional right.
So if you have a general denial, say, I didn't do it. If you have an alibi, you're perfectly within your rights to say, I wasn't there. I was wearing a red shirt, not a green shirt, or whatever it is your alibi is. And state it and restate it in response to every question. There's nothing wrong with that, with telling the truth.
Absolutely. There's nothing wrong with that at all. And, you know, a lot of the listeners are going to say, well, heck, if I'm innocent, what do I have to fear? But like I say, it's only relative. Maybe you're innocent, or maybe you have some guilty knowledge, or maybe you just think you're innocent. You can speak to law enforcement officers, and they're going to come at you and cross-examine you and be a good guy, bad guy routine, and then they're going to recess and bring in another officer, and they're going to try to get you in an inconsistent statement, and what starts out to be a friendly, happy interview ends up being a contested, controversial interview, and if you go down that path that you think you want to talk to them, well, go ahead. Just the fact that it may come back to haunt you later.
Dee, we have had a wonderful interview today, and now we have about 10 minutes left, and I want to kind of catch all and talk generally about a few issues of criminal prosecution. Now then, people need to be aware that their phones can be tapped. Isn't this correct?
I couldn't hear the question.
My question is, people should be aware that their phones can be tapped. Their cell phones can be tapped.
Yeah, in this day and age, probably a third person that tries to intercept or tap two other people who are not aware of it is probably in violation of the Safe Streets federal law. But I can record you now. You can record me. If we meet on the street, I can be secretly tape recording you. And as long as one person consents to the recording, anybody can record anybody. I mean, Jimmy Hoffa found that out. He was trying to bribe a juror many years ago, and the juror actually was an undercover FBI agent and tape recorded him. And USA versus Hoffa went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and Jimmy ended up going to prison over it. So you got to be careful who you talk to and what you say, and anything on your telephone, you know, Cellebrite system, Cellebrite, the police can take your phone and run it through a little machine and take things off your phone. They can get your computer and your server, and anything and everything that you've ever put on the computer can be searched later if it's done in a lawful manner.
Now then, can a person be wiretapped? Can a bug be placed on a car or a person?
If they get a search warrant, yeah. Generally, if they put a dart on your car where they can follow your car and know where you're going, or if they try to tap the conversations bug you in the car or the home, they would have to have a search warrant to do that and go before a judge, because we still have the right of privacy in this country. It's not as strong as it used to be, but we still do have rights of privacy. And, you know, I'm not worried about wiretapping is very rare in this state. The feds do some wiretapping in drug conspiracy deals, but generally in state court, the law enforcement officers don't have the wherewithal and the time to do wiretapping and so forth. But they do tape record you. I mean, the tape recording is done all the time where they'll call you on the phone and make a cold call to you and have somebody talk with you and ask you questions and tape record you, and that's probably lawful.
The old lie detector test is growingly obsolete. Isn't that correct?
Well, lie detectors are an effective tool. They're about 90-95% accurate. Law enforcement uses lie detectors all the time as a tool. They threaten that they're going to give you a lie detector, which you don't have to take. But lie detector tests, polygraphs are not admissible in either state or federal court, not anywhere. There's just a few little places, like in probation hearings and parole hearings, where sometimes they use a lie detector and they let them into evidence, or court martials sometimes in the military. Be real careful about taking a lie detector, because there are three parts of it. Number one, the pre-test interview. Number two, the actual test. Number three, the post-test interview. And in number one and number three, the interview before and after, that's all admissible against you. And they'll ask you to tell them anything and everything you've ever done wrong in your life, and you start telling them your life story because they tell you they want you to get it off your conscience before they give you the test. So, and then after the test is over, they may lie to you and say, well, you flunked it. You were deceitful. And, you know, you're sitting there going, well, no, I wasn't. I shouldn't have been. And then maybe you make an incriminating statement, and they've lied to you. Maybe you passed it with flying colors. So you got to be real careful. You need to have advice of a lawyer or the presence of a lawyer if you take a lie detector test.
Dee, thank you for everything you shared with our listening audience today. And tell me where your gun law handbook is available. Is this on Amazon?
I think that it is on Amazon. I'm just I don't make a living selling books. I'm a lawyer. And so they can get a hold of me at dee@deewampler.com. dee@deewampler.com.
That's
WAM.com, either one. But I'm in Springfield, Missouri, and anybody can Google me, Springfield, Missouri, D. Wampler. And, you know, I'd certainly be glad to send them a book or sell them one. And I've also written a pamphlet, The Trial of Christ, A Criminal Lawyer Defends Jesus, and I enjoy speaking on that subject, and I send, a lot of times I send those little pamphlets out.
I just want to thank you so much. I think this was a wonderful interview, and you're listening to Jaws of Justice Radio on KKFI. Signing off.
It's the 420 Drug War News. The following was recorded in Oregon by DTN reporter Doug McVeigh. It features U.S. Congressman Earl Blumenauer.
I've been encouraged that we are watching broader awareness, the evolution of a legal cannabis industry. Canada, last month, legalized nationally, and that goes live in October for adult use. I'm even hearing from people in Mexico that there's the new administration there is looking at legalizing cannabis. We can foresee a North American cannabis market in the not too distant future. There's also, I think, real excitement around the work that is being done in terms of the applications of the therapeutic uses of cannabis. The research is really taking hold, moving rather rapidly. It would move more rapidly if the federal government didn't make it essentially illegal to research cannabis in this country. The real cutting-edge stuff is taking place, for example, in Israel or in Great Britain. We'll see more in Canada. And we, again, have bipartisan legislation that would change that so that we can go forward to be able to understand what the therapeutic aspects are, to be able to know what people are buying, because right now we don't have the standards that we have in terms of the pharmaceutical industry that's looking at this very nervously, and maybe they should. We've been working to try and make sure that the Veterans Administration can work with American veterans dealing with the aspects of medical marijuana in their lives. I have been working on this for years, and I will tell you some of the most striking and touching stories I have heard are from veterans and their families about how access to medical marijuana saved their lives, transformed their existence, dealing with chronic pain, PTSD, or other neurological disorders that cannabis helps.
The preceding was from the most recent Century of Lies program hosted by DTN reporter Doug McVeigh. He was covering a seminar up there in Oregon about the end of the drug war featuring U.S. Congressman Earl Blumenauer. I am Dean at drugtruth.net.
We hope you enjoyed today's show and that we leave you with something to think about, something to talk to your neighbors about, and a reason to get involved. As always, the opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests of Jaws of Justice Radio, not of KKFI, the Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, its staff, or volunteers. You can find our calendar of events and a link to our show on the Jaws of Justice Radio Facebook page. You can always listen to us live and find our podcasts on the KKFI website, kkfi.org. If you have a show idea or want to help produce the show, email us at jawsofjusticeradio@yahoo.com. This is Jamie reminding you our outro music is Better Man from the Playing for Change CD. Please tune in for the rest of our 9 a.m. weekday lineup with Law and Disorder on Tuesday, Alternative Radio on Wednesday, Cowtown Conversations on Thursday, and Between the Lines at 9 a.m., followed by Bioneers at 9:30 a.m. on Fridays. Up next is Monday Morning Medicine Show with Dr. Mike, and at noon, Arts Magazine with Michael Hoag. Stick around for Jazz and Blues in the afternoon and Eco Radio KC at 6 p.m. Then round out your day south of the border with Fiesta Musical, Compartiendo Familia, and Compartiendo en Noche.